The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
FlyPod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Well, he's back, Richard Paul Evans, with a brand new book. It's the last book in the series. The series is The Walk, the book Walking on Water. Richard, welcome.
It's good to be back. Thank you.
Hey, Walking on Water, and man, how many books in this series?
Five
books, and this is the last one, guaranteed to make you cry, isn't it?
I cried when I was writing it. I cried when I was editing the book, and I even cried when I was reading the audio, which I think is pathetic, but I was so embarrassed. But I looked over, and my assistant was just sobbing, and the tech guy behind the glass was crying as well. So I was like, okay, at least I know it's affecting people.
Well, did you do the audio for every book?
For the walk series, yes.
Okay, so what's that like doing that? I know reading a book, doing it perfectly, that's tough.
Oh, I dislike it because it exposes all the flaws in your speaking and grammar. And I realized someone said to me, where's your accent from? I thought, I don't have an accent. That's very strange. And so I don't. And it's like reading a book out loud three times. And so your voice hurts and you're putting, you know, Cepacol. You're just spraying yourself as you do it. But the walk was so important to me. I felt like I had to do it. I wanted to make sure I got it right. Because every now and then you get someone who reads your books and like they don't understand the character.
Reading a book, now that's tough because you get that all the time or maybe that click.
Yes.
Mean, you've probably had an editor listening. How did that work?
Yeah, this Simon & Schuster has, they have a studio, and so there's people sitting there listening to every word. And they'll come in, they'll give you apple juice or something to get rid of the click. And it's an interesting process. It's more boring than anything. But again, to get it right, I felt like I needed to do that.
Well, let's talk about the walk. Kind of let's start with the beginning in case somebody doesn't know about this series, because the series is worth every book and reading it one by one.
The Walk is the story of Alan Christopherson. Alan Christopherson is a successful advertising executive in Seattle, Washington. His life is just perfect. He's winning lots of awards. He's making a lot of money. He's madly in love with his best friend, his wife, who he was literally the girl next door. Things are looking pretty great for Alan. And one day the universe changes the tracks beneath him. And his wife is thrown by a horse. She breaks her back. While he's caring for her, his partner steals all of his clients and he loses his ad agency. Then his wife dies. And when he comes home, he finds out his home's been foreclosed on, that he's really let everything slip while he cares for her. And he is just decimated. And so it's like, at first he wants to take his life. He sees no reason to go on. And then he decides instead to go for a walk. He's going to walk as far away from Seattle as he can, which happens to be Key West, Florida. And so he begins this walk. And what the book really is, it's a metaphor about life. It's trying to discover why we live when we have no reason to live. When everything that binds us to our humanity, when everything, you know, the bonds that we hold on to, when those are cut, what do you live for? And so the walk was my exploration of life. And that's what's happened. This series has been different in some ways. I feel like I have a million people walking across America with me. Because there's huge fan bases in Poland and Brazil and the Philippines and it's even Japan. It's like, and I get letters from these people and they're having similar experiences, even though it's not their country. It's like they understand loss and they understand what it's like to try to find a reason to live.
You had people come up to you and say, "Gosh, you know, the book is just such an inspiration. I mean, you know, what's happening to your main character here has been happening in my life. Although I might not be walking, you know, maybe you saved a life or two.
Yes, I've actually had five people tell me that the book had saved their lives. The number was four until 3 nights ago. I was at a book signing and a woman, I told that little fact. A woman came, she goes, make it five. I had already planned my suicide when I found your book. And she said, and she just broke down crying. She said, you showed me why I need to live and that life was worth living. And I thought how amazing, what a blessing. This book is different in the sense that it's kind of a movement. I mean, I've had more than 40 people call from their deathbeds wanting to know how the book ended before they died. It mattered that much.
Wow.
I had, 3 days ago, 4 days ago, I had an email from a young man who said, I've never read your books, but the series of The Walk is all my mother talks about. She's dying. And she's just saying, I need to live long enough to read the final book. And he said, it's just a matter of days. And the book didn't come out for a few more days. And I said, would you like me to talk? I emailed back, said, would you like me to talk to her? And I got on a flight. When I landed, I turned on my phone. And he said, thank you for the offer. My mother just passed away. But that was very kind of you. You know, it was... The book means a lot to people because they're finding where they are in life. And when this book came out last week, the sales were massive. I mean, almost $1 million in sales just the first week in just the U.S. So there's a lot of people who are connected to the series.
With the series, The Walk, now you started writing the book. You probably knew, well, you knew where you were going maybe and heading. Maybe you knew the beginning, the end, maybe you didn't. But did you expect the book to take off like it did and to be such an inspiration?
I never know what to expect with a book. In fact, I like to show my readers something. If you line up all the books, one of them doesn't look like the others. One has the number two, has the book number on it. The rest don't. And the reason why is the first book came out, and I was on the Today Show, and it was a top four New York Times bestseller and huge. And then the next book came out and sales dropped in half. And the publisher starts talking about, we need to cancel the series or think about it. It's like, well, hold on a second. It's like, let the book find itself, you know? And then the third book came out and sales were huge. And then all of a sudden they're excited. We need to make the series longer. And it's like, no, the series is what it is. Just respect the series. And then it just got bigger and bigger. But that's why they didn't want to put a number on there, because they thought none of people had read the second book and it would stop them from going back and buying the new one. So, but I didn't know where it was going. I knew he was going to make it to Key West, but I didn't know what the circumstances were. And so I decided I would do this kind of like improv. First of all, I decided I would, at first I thought I could write this from my desk, that I could just pull up the maps and do it all online. I soon realized that's impossible, because you need to really get a feel for every place he goes through. And so called my daughter and said, we need to go for a drive. And we drove across America. We drove from, over the course of 4 years, we drove from Seattle to Key West and had wonderful adventures. And that became part of the book. And you just, you know, until you're out there, that's why I wanted to kind of improv it. Like, for instance, Southern Missouri, we get caught in a tornado. And we're taking shelter with people and their dogs. And you don't, unless you have that experience, you know, you're not going to be able to put it in the book in the right way. So the things that we came across and saw were stunning and found their way into the books.
You know, I've heard of authors that write Civil War stories doing that. They go to the sites. It might be 5 a.m. Maybe there was a battle or something, and they're there. They want to get the feel of it. So basically, that's what you and your daughter did.
Oh, you have to. I mean, to do it right, you have to. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for this series I have a tremendous amount of respect for my readers. They deserve that. They deserve the best I can do. And if I don't understand what I'm really seeing, and believe me, if I get something wrong, they let me know. You know, if you have 1 million readers, they will let you know immediately what you did wrong. And so it's very important that I'm there. I remember I did get one letter. My daughter just rolled her eyes. She goes, maybe you should at least get a map. And I just wanted to slap her. It's like, we drove every inch of the way. It's like, so.
you have one of the states out of it?
No, she was wrong. She just she was pretty sure she was right about some fact, yeah.
So the series, how many years has this been in the making?
So 5 years.
5 years. Yeah. That's a long time for a series. Maybe not.
Well, it was as fast as I could write it, but you know, it's just it was what it was. It was interesting because I left the book in cliffhangers, which people just drove them crazy. They were very angry. I'd get really angry letters, but it also guaranteed that when the next book came out, the sales were massive as people ran off to find out what had happened.
So are you looking at maybe another series now? Not maybe the same subject, but because you've written a lot of standalone books except for the Michael Vay series.
Right. I don't know. And I would like to. I really enjoyed this experience. I believe it's when people have something like this and become part of a community. And so I enjoyed it. The only reason I wouldn't do it is because I do have the Michael Vay series. I do have my Christmas book. And 3 books a year is really tough. All I do is write. People ask what I, you know, if I have any hobbies. And it's like, well, when would I have time for that? I mean, if I have time, it's got to be spent with my family, because writing 3 books a year isn't easy.
And I know that the readers pretty much demand that from you because your books are so great.
No, thank you.
I know that for a fact.
Yeah, I was speaking in prison. I was speaking actually in the one section of prison a couple months ago. And this tough guy came up with tattoos all over and he goes, "It might interest you to know that there is actually a walk reading group here in prison. And we sit around and we talk about the walk." I said, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "And I admit, we get teary-eyed sometimes, just talking about it. But the idea of him walking across America, something, of course, that ironically they cannot do, but they're also on their journeys." So, again, people find it where they need to. I mean, it's amazing how the book people can relate to the book from so many different places.
You know, I mentioned earlier that you had this series in Michael Vay, but your Christmas stories also, you had some stories in there that were grouped together, didn't you, in a series or not?
Well, when I started, my first book was The Christmas Box, and trying to capitalize off the success of a book that sold 8 million copies, I decided I'd better connect to that. So I wrote a trilogy. So I wrote Time, Peace, and the Letter. And then the next books, the Locket, that was a series as well. But that was not a series, but it was a trilogy. But they were loosely related. They were all written so that you could read them as standalones. This is a flat-out series. You're following someone.
You didn't leave us with a cliffhanger here on the walking on water, did you?
People would have killed me if I did. I mean, it's interesting that people are upset. It's like, are you trying to make more money? You're stretching it out. It's like, no. It's like, this is a natural break here. And I knew when I started I was going to do 5 books. I told you I was going to do 5 books. But now they want me to extend it. You know, it's like, have him walk back to Seattle now. And I'm getting all the letters like, please don't take Alan away from us. I hear that every day. If you go to my Facebook, the response is just phenomenal. Or go to Amazon and read the reviews. It's an average 5-star review. It's 4.9 stars. And people are writing. It's very heartwarming. But they're very sad. They're sad that the series is over. And it's like, please don't take Alan away from us.
We know your other series that you have going right now, probably not as popular as the Walk. It's Michael Vay, and this is more of a young adult. You probably don't get too many people at book signings on Michael Vay, do you?
You saw the picture. Actually, Michael Vay is the most popular thing I've written since The Christmas Box. We just crossed 1 million book and print mark in the U.S. Yeah, it was really strange. When we came out with Michael Vay, my publisher didn't think it would sell many copies. So they made me a really low offer, which we rejected. And then radio show host Glenn Beck found the book, and he said, "I believe in this." And so we brought it out, and the book exploded. It hit #1 on the New York Times the first week out. But it was interesting because the readers were mostly adults. And so my book signings looked like my normal book signings. It looked like my signings, but they had brought a few of their kids. That's what they looked like. Then the next signing, there's like a few more kids there. And I was actually in Columbus, Ohio. I remember I walked in and there was a group of, a row of like 9-year-olds that were like whooping when I came in. I thought, that's different from my signings. And then all of a sudden, the third book came out, and wow, everything changed. We held it at a high school. We thought there'd be a few hundred people. I sat behind the stage. We decided, let's do kind of a presentation. We were not prepared. We had two cash registers. It was a three-hour wait to buy a book. 3,000, more than 3,000 people came. And then I realized that Michael Vay had hit a new level. People call themselves Vayniacs. They form clubs around the world. It's really crazy just how devoted people are. Parents all the time. I mean, I hear every single day, you got my kid to read. They don't read anything, but they'll read Michael Vay. And, but they always say the same thing. My kid is your biggest fan. You know, it's never a casual thing. It's always like, oh, he's read the book 20 times. I hear that every single day.
Yeah, like you say, I mean, even adults love Michael Vay. I know I do. Michael Vay pretty much, he's got powers along with his group. They have powers too, and I think that's pretty appealing to kids, isn't it?
Well, it's empowering, yes. And the fact that Michael has problems, he has Tourette syndrome, he's kind of small for his age, got bullied, and which makes it an irony because he could stop the bullies. And in the first book, he finally does, but he can't because he can't show his powers, and he finally uses them. And as he says to his mom, I feel like I have a Ferrari that I have to keep in the garage. I'm not allowed to drive. It's like, what's the point of having it? And so, Michael Vay, the electricity is really a metaphor for our children. It's that they all have power. I received a letter from a woman the other day. She said, my son weighs more than 300 pounds. He will not leave his room. He will not go to school anymore because of the bullying. He won't go. We can't get him to go. The bullying is too severe. The only thing he likes is Michael Vay. Would you please sign a book to him? Would you please give him some encouragement? And I remember one book signing, I was at a school and the principal came up and he goes, after I gave my presentation, he said, that was the best presentation I've ever heard here. And he said, do you realize the first three youth in line were autistic? He said, I've never seen them get in line. I've never seen them volunteer for anything. And so it's interesting to me that autistic children and children with Tourette syndrome are really attracted to the Michael Vay series. I think because they see themselves in it and they feel okay and they feel like they can be something great.
In this book, which is kind of a real cool thing, I think, Alan's father, he's had a heart attack. He's in the hospital. You don't know what's going to happen there, but Alan has to cut his walk a little short, go back to California. He wants to be by his father, which any son would want to if they got along with their father, even if they didn't, I think. And when Alan goes to the home, here his father's writing the family history. Talk to me a little about that. That is a cool piece in this book.
It was interesting writing that because it's a story within a story. And I think what hit me is right after my mom died, I found out that she had written a family history. And so here I am sitting around with my siblings. I pick it up, I start reading this, and I thought, why didn't I read this 3 weeks ago? It answers so many questions and raises so many more questions. More than anything, I just wanted another day with my mom to sit down and talk to her. And I thought, this is a really valuable thing to really understand our parents. As kids, we're extremely selfish. We look at our parents in terms of how they meet our needs. We don't look at them as just an older version of ourselves. You know, we're afraid that we might realize that our parents are as flawed as we are. And so this is a chance for him to look at this and say, wow, my dad is not quite who I thought he was. He also, there's a part in there where he reads about his dad's experience in Vietnam. This was actually a lot of fun to write. I interviewed my next door neighbor, and he was a lieutenant. He was over a platoon in the bush for 11 months, if you can imagine that. So we're talking constant combat. At one point, just about everyone in his group was injured. And boy, he shared things. I came back and my editor looked at it and she said, are you writing about Alan Christopherson or are you writing a book about Vietnam? And so I actually cut it to a third or a fourth of what I had there because it was so fascinating. But in putting this in there, it's like it changes your perception of who someone is. I wanted my readers to have that experience, not just of my character, but in their own lives. To say, what is it about my parents or someone around me that maybe they're not who I think they are?
Yeah, the Vietnam part was, amazing, I thought. And was it long enough? I don't know. And I didn't know maybe if you had some battle experience, but then I'm thinking, no, you wouldn't have even been able to go to Vietnam, I don't think. You're not quite that old.
No, I'm not.
So, while the neighbor, and you got some great information from him. World War II, of course, his father, it seems like everybody in the family had been in a battle at one time. The Battle of the Bulge, a lot of reading on that, a lot of research, or how did you come up with that?
I love reading histories. The Longest Winter is the best book I've ever read about Battle of the Bulge. But it was, I was trying to show that these were kind of warriors, but also that his father, I mean, he's an accountant. He sees his dad as this accountant, the staid individual. It's like, this guy's an action figure. It's like he's sleeping in the mud in combat. He can smell the Viet Cong 100 yards away, literally. I mean, this is real stuff. And I mean, some of the stories I got were crazy. I mean, one, I think I did leave it in the book. He was saying, one of the weird things is after I got back, you become so hypersensitive to everything around you because you have to be, it's your life. He said, I'm sitting there, we went up in the canyons and we're having a barbecue. And I said, there's someone in the mountains. I'm like, no. It's like, no, there's someone up there. And an hour later, they'd say, no, you're just hearing things or thinking it's like post-traumatic disorder or something. Someone comes stumbling out. He goes, how'd you know he was up there? He goes, I was lost and I saw the fire. And he goes, I could hear you. He could hear him like a quarter mile away. And he goes, you just become hypersensitive because anything. They always say that you could, that the Viet Cong could smell the American soldiers because of dairy. But he said, we could smell the fish because there's no fish out there. You could smell the fish oil from 100 yards away. It's pretty crazy, yeah.
So I guess people could take away from walking on water that maybe you should look at your family history and write down the things that you might, that your family might not know, huh?
Oh, I think it's a great idea. I think ultimately books are about understanding. You know, that's how we connect with each other, and books are a powerful way to do that. So I always tell people, it's like, you should write your own book. Yeah, just for yourself, just for you to have that process to go through and say, oh, look at yourself in third person, and you might be even more forgiving of yourself than you are when you put yourself out there like that. But this is a chance for Alan to get to know his father in a different way, and I wanted to have that experience for him in the book and for the readers to say, okay, this is not who I thought it was.
Well, since you've been in, you've also had a Christmas book out there. Let's talk about that last Christmas book you've had.
Well, it's, as you mentioned, it actually was not a Christmas book per se, not a Christmas title, but it came out of Christmas, and it was called The Four Doors. It started from a talk I gave a decade ago, and it has grown into a talk I've given all around the world. In fact, at one time I was flown by Bain Capital to Portugal to give it to a group of the top Harvard MBA graduates to teach them ethics. I've given it in prison just recently, in fact, and it's a really powerful talk, and people for years have asked for a book on it, something they could keep. And so I finally wrote that book and brought it out last December. And so it's a different kind of thing. It's a New York Times bestseller, but it's different than my novels. And in terms of, I guess it would fall in the self-help category. But that's also very satisfying, especially with young people who have said it has helped them find direction.
I guess The Four Doors, I mean, that will help you turn your life around if you actually need it, or help you become a better person.
Well, it's about, the whole full title is The Four Doors, A Guide to Joy, Freedom, and a Meaningful Life. And so it started with a talk I gave to a group of high school students and or middle school students, and the topic was Everything I Wish I Knew When I Was Your Age. And that's how it began. And so I've had a really amazing life. You know, I've danced in the White House. I've tracked through rice fields, and I have been to 23 countries. And considering where I came from, it's kind of unlikely. A poor kid, seventh of eight children in Midvale, Utah. You know, it's there are certain patterns or certain things I learned with my life that got me to that place that have allowed me to have a really remarkable life.
You know, I would not finish an interview correctly if I didn't ask about your nonprofit agency.
The Christmas Box House. Christmas Box House is doing fantastic. We just celebrated the 15-year anniversary of one of our shelters. We have housed more than, I think we're coming up to 63,000 abused children we've helped since we opened. It's always a joy. You know, it's always great to work with them. I was at a Comic-Con for Michael Vay the other couple weeks ago, and this really great kid came up, just contagious smile. He reminded me of John Cusack. You know, you couldn't help but grinning when you saw him, and he came up, and he was just really nice. And after we talked for a moment, I thought, I like this guy. And he said, well, you need to know something. He goes, you and I are connected in a way you don't know. He goes, I'm one of your Christmas box house kids. I lived in your shelter, and I've always been grateful for you and what you did at the worst time of my life. And I thought, this kid was fantastic. I thought he's really going somewhere. And it's fun to now be at a stage where I can see these kids grown up and see them going out and starting their own lives and successfully. And they come back. I had one kid came. He was a student body president at his high school. He said, yeah, I lived in your shelter. And so it's fun to see good things happen from, you know, we cast our bread on the waters, I guess, and years later to see it come back.
Richard, if I want more information about the books, the walk, Michael Vay, Heather Books, other endeavors that you're doing, I'm sure you have a website.
Yes, you can go to richardpaulevans.com. I also have a very active Facebook community. If you like Facebook, it's Richard Paul Evans fan page, and that's how I communicate. And I actually do communicate. People can't believe I actually will write to them on Facebook. But being an author is kind of a lonely thing. And so Facebook has given me a way to come out of the cave. And I'll put things on there, parts of books, kind of test it out and say, what do you think of this? So come on over.
Well, if you're a reader of Richard Paul Evans' Walking on Water, the last book in the series, if you're not, you might want to check out the 5 books, the Walk series. If you have a kid, Michael Vay. Tell you what, that's a great series. I even like that. And, of course, Christmas stories, inspirational stories. Richard Paul Evans, he's the real deal, folks. I mean, what you hear here, I mean, he's not putting anything on. This guy is a great author. I'm happy to say that I've known him for apparently over 15 years, because that's when you started your nonprofit, and I knew you before that. Richard, thanks a lot.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you, Mark.
You've been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Richard Paul Evans, author of his brand new book, the last book in the series, Walking on Water.
To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.